welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It is Tuesday, and so every other Tuesday, my guest, Dr. Michael Rosen, joins us, and it is good to have you back, my friend. How you doing?
I'm doing well, and I'm glad to be here again.
It's always great to have you, man. There's so much going on right now. Any political junkie is overdosing. locally, nationally,
well,
you know.
It's an election day.
Yeah.
In Wisconsin and elsewhere, and it's going to be, especially in light of what happened in Kansas, which was very interesting, the vote on
the abortion.
Abortion issue, where overwhelmingly
Democrats
and Republicans voted to keep the right for women to make medical choices for themselves. It'll be interesting to see what happens in places like Michigan and Wisconsin takes place in these primaries.
You know, Dr. Rosen, I had a conversation with a conservative friend, and contrary to popular beliefs, I do have conservative friends, and we had this conversation on yesterday, and he said to me that Republican women really don't care about the abortion issue. I said, you're wrong, and I hope you guys keep thinking that way, because there's something about the kinship of women. Even though, you know, it might not always be the case, but taking away the woman's right is not just something that Republican women are going to say yay to and cheer. There are Republican women who resent the fact that people that these men and others have taken away their rights. And their rights to their bodies, and so that's not just a Democratic or Republican issue.
I think that there's probably a split among Republican women on this issue.
A split is good, though.
Yeah, I think that some for religious reasons, or for at least what they think are religious reasons, and not understanding the real science are pretty militantly anti-abortion, but I think there are a number of another group of Republican women who are conservative economically, want low taxes, less regulation,
right.
But they don't want to see the government regulating their healthcare choices, so they're a little more consistent in terms of their deregulatory views, and I think we saw that somewhat even in the last election, presidential election, where although Waukesha County, Ozaukee County, Washington County,
yeah,
which are strong
conservative
Republican strongholds, they saw a decline in the percentage of the winning percentage that Republicans got. And that was partly a rejection of Donald Trump, and it's mainly attributed to women who in the past have voted Republican are now had deserted Trump for a number of reasons, his policies and also just his general persona.
Let me ask you something, Dr. Rosen. You and I have been around a while. You see Donald Trump. You know the man's a criminal. We all know he's a criminal. We all know he will say and do anything to retain his power. We know that he really doesn't care about the average person. His concern is solely about himself, his family, his wealth. We know this man really doesn't care about this nation. His actions prove all those things. All the different laws that he's broken, for heaven's sakes, he's been indicted twice. And yet there's still such a strong group of people who will follow him off a cliff. What are your thoughts about that? Do you think those people really understand, Dr. Rosen, who and what Donald Trump is, or they've just bought into his the aura of who he is.
Well, I think, for lack of a better term, they're true believers. I mean, one of the problems is that once they got rid of the equal time doctrine,
yeah, right,
with media, a lot of people. And with the proliferation of the internet, so that you can pick your facts, right, on the news, a lot of people are no longer well informed. They're informed by very partisan media, and so they don't get the facts. So, for example, on the issue of global warming, which is a consensus among everyone who studies that issue, right, all of the scientists who study that issue, there's a consensus. And for people who aren't scientists like myself, you can see it with the catastrophic climate events, the once-in-a-lifetime catastrophic climate events that are taking place
all over the world
multiple times a year,
yeah,
which were predicted because of global warming. The combination of media that is partisan, that is Fox News and other even worse forms like Alex Jones, et cetera,
right,
and funding from corporations that stand to gain from or profit from the denial of climate change, for example, just as tobacco companies profited,
right,
and funded research, funded people who are willing to deny,
yes,
that tobacco was carcinogenic. Oil companies have funded research to deny or question climate change. And so people live in these silos, and if that's all the information they get, they tend to believe it. I mean, Donald Trump, remember, when he was running, said he could shoot somebody
right,
on Fifth Avenue and people would still vote for him. So he clearly thinks that lots of his voters are chumps, not Trumps, but chumps. But the fact of the matter is that there is a hardcore group of the electorate, probably 39%, 40%, 41%, who would follow the man off a bridge. And that's unfortunate because it really affects our politics, and it affects the middle and working class people in this
country. Dr. Rosen, 40% of people who are willing to follow a psychopath, nobody can question whether or not Donald Trump is a psychopath, and they're willing to follow him even in the face of the things that we know. So you're watching the fact that the FBI invaded, his boudoir on last night, and Americans who can't claim to be patriotic and believe in the flag and love the Constitution and all of those things are saying, what an injustice. How dare the FBI? You can't talk about you love the nation and the laws of the nation, but then when a judge legally has information and requests that the FBI do this, which is normal, right? And yet you are willing to push back against that and then say, to hell with the FBI, we got to destroy the FBI. That's a dangerous reality.
Yeah.
Dr. Rosen, we're talking about. We saw what happened on January 6th. Now we've got people talking about challenging the FBI, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the FBI has, in my opinion, a sordid history in this country.
Yeah, I talked about it earlier.
Yeah. On the other hand, in this case, they could only engage in this investigation if a judge was presented with sufficient evidence from the Justice Department that the judge could reasonably conclude that a crime had been committed. So there are checks and balances in this particular case. It's quite different, say, for example, than the assassination of Fred Hampton.
Yeah, I talked about that earlier.
Yeah, where, and of course, that wasn't the FBI, it was the Chicago Police Department.
Right.
But the FBI did have a program to both exterminate and discredit
civil
rights activists,
yes.
Whether from
Dr. King,
Malcolm X.
Right.
And it was in that context that, of course, Fred Hampton and many others were assassinated. That's quite different than this, where the head of the Justice Department, Attorney General Garland,
right.
Who's a very cautious individual, and I think most people recognize that, clearly was presented with sufficient evidence, and he had to convince a judge. The White House had no role in this. And so, in fact, one of the differences between the Biden administration and the Trump administration is that the Trump administration used the Justice Department as an arm of the Trump administration and really of Donald Trump, which is contrary to the purpose and mission of the Justice Department. Biden has made it clear that the Justice Department will be entirely independent of the White House. And so those who are alleging that this is the Democrats and Joe Biden continuing a war on Donald Trump are simply misinformed. And again, it's the problem is these silos where people, we don't all operate off the same set of facts anymore.
So, Dr. Rosen, hang on a second. We've got to go to a break. Phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. My guest is Dr. Michael Rosen. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Dr. Michael Rosen. And you know, Dr. Rosen, I was listening to Newt Gingrich. You remember that rocket scientist?
Of course.
And he was talking about yesterday. It's time that the Republicans go back to the Ronald Reagan era. Dr. Rosen, the Tea Party, the MAGA people, back to the Ronald Reagan era. What's going on, man?
I think that, Ronald Reagan has been elevated outside of or elevated in the mythology of the Republican Party, in part for good reason, in the sense that, he had an 8-year run that was quite popular. But Reagan...
We thought he was bad.
But Reagan, in many ways, was very bad... was very bad for working class
right.
and middle class people. In many ways, the Reagan period started, if you recall, and you were
yeah,
at
you know,
Smith
I was working
at the time,
right.
Started with a severe double dip recession.
On the unions,
12%, double dip recession,
right.
12% of the labor force was unemployed at the beginning of Reagan's presidency. He launched a vicious attack on the air traffic controllers.
Right. Destroyed unions.
Mainly Vietnam veterans who were working under pretty arduous conditions, managing the flights in the airport. And when they went on strike, they were one of the few unions, by the way, that had supported Ronald Reagan. He fired them all. And that sent a message that Reagan was going to, the federal government was now going to be an enemy of working people and their right to have a voice on the job and their right to engage in collective bargaining. And despite promising, and see, here is one of the real conundrums. Despite promising to balance the budget, Ronald Reagan tripled the national debt during his administration, while he slashed discretionary spending, that is, spending on education, spending on health care, spending on veterans' benefits. While he slashed those programs, he dramatically increased military spending, and as a result, the national debt under him tripled.
So we went from the largest creditor nation to the largest debtor nation in the world under Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, but those are you know, facts, and as I said, there's an aura of myth because during that period of time, of course, Reagan was successful in attracting and developing a cohort of blue-collar votes called Reagan Democrats, working-class people who voted for Reagan. I think part of the appeal was Reagan was very effective on television. He was he was an actor. He was a skilled communicator. Much to the dissatisfaction of the hard right, Reagan didn't get rid of Social Security. He didn't get rid of Medicare. He didn't get rid of women's right to choose. Even though he ran on those things, he was much less militant in his pursuit of those hardcore conservative agendas than people have a feel-good feeling for that period,
Dr. Rosen, to see Newt Gingrich come back with that, I understand that's Newt Gingrich in his heyday,
right?
But to see the Republican Party move from the Tea Party to the MAGA Party, back to the Trump Party. Ronald Reagan. Come on.
Yeah, the policies aren't that different. In reality, but what has happened is, as the country has been gerrymandered, and Republican politicians have to move further and further to the right to keep their offices, they've become much more, and they are safer in their offices, they become much more militant and aggressive in pursuing what have been rhetorical Republican Party goals. But the fact of the matter is that under Ronald Reagan, inequality grew. We had a decimation of the manufacturing base in this country. We had a decimation of unions. We had a decline in real wages for working people. We had a huge increase in mergers and acquisitions. We had massive tax cuts for the wealthy. So there was a real redistribution of the wealth, or Robin Hood in reverse is what people used to call it, because Reagan stole from the poor and gave to the rich.
So it's safe to say you don't want to see a return to the Reagan doctrine.
No, I mean, if we want to return to anything, I'd like to see a return to Franklin Roosevelt.
Right.
But I will say that, recently the Biden administration has enacted several very important policies. Not everything I'd like to see. You know, for example, they did not get child care tax credit extended, which had been a major thing in reducing poverty in this country. That's just one example. But, you know, they got the infrastructure
bill. I know people don't want to talk about that anymore.
The infrastructure bill, which is going to help repair roads and bridges, which are critical to commerce in the country. It's going to help replace.
Dr. Rose, got to hold that thought. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. My guest is Dr. Michael Rosen. You can join us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number. My guest is Dr. Michael Rosen. And you know, Dr. Rosen, we wanted to do this last time, but we're gonna slip it in now. And what are your thoughts about, you know, the Republican National Convention coming here in 2024? You see all the fanfare and bipartisanship is what they're talking about. That's why this is important. The Republicans, you know, clearly they had nowhere else to go.
Milwaukee didn't win the Republican convention. We were the only one at the dance, so to speak.
So what are your thoughts?
Well, where I want to start is talking about the totally inflated economic impact that most of the media has bought into.
Well, $200 million, they say.
And that is fictional. And I want to discuss why. I'll start by just pointing out that the most comprehensive study of national political conventions concluded that, and it was a study of both Democratic and Republican conventions, concluded that neither party's presence had a discernible impact on employment, personal income, or personal per capita income in the cities where the convention was held. There was no significant wage gains for local employees, according to the report. And the economic gain from the event does not accrue to the host city, but rather benefits the bottom line of corporate headquarters. For example, the Hyatt is a hotel that will benefit from the event. Now, let's talk about why. First of all, Milwaukee, in the summer, when the convention is being held, our hotels and restaurants downtown are already filled. So what really is going to take place is that instead of you or I or the listeners going downtown to eat at the restaurants or people coming to stay in the hotels to go to Summerfest or whatever festival is taking place at the time, they'll stay away because they're not coming inside that perimeter,
right?
The security perimeter, and they'll be substituted or replaced by conventioneers. The real way money is made is that the hotels, and this is documented if you actually read the study from Cleveland State, that Cleveland State University, that the Republicans and the city leaders in Milwaukee and now the media are parroting without reading it, what you find is that 2 years before the convention in Cleveland, they had an occupancy rate, a hotel occupancy rate of 83%. The year of the convention, the occupancy rate was 89%, so minimal change. What was changed was that hotel rooms had about a 33% increase in their price. They didn't increase wages. They didn't hire any more people. All they did was jack up their prices, and as a result, the corporate headquarters made a lot of money. Now, remember, if a lot, Milwaukee does not have the hotel capacity for this convention.
Right.
So many of the delegates will be staying in Illinois hotels or in Madison hotels. And so there's that alleged economic bang will not even take place in the city of Milwaukee. And there are businesses inside the perimeter, businesses, whether it's a clothing store or a movie theater or other kinds of inside the perimeter, that are actually going to lose business during the convention because they aren't going to be able, unless they are providing services to conventioneers and a clothing store is not, they'll shut down because people are going to stay away. So both because of this, what we call in economics the substitution effect, that is, we're substituting conventioneers for normal tourists, and the leakage effect, that is, the money going outside the city, the impact isn't nearly as great. So those people who say, including, unfortunately, the mayor, the new mayor, who says, well, this is a business decision, they're wrong. This is not going to have a huge economic impact. And what I'm concerned about is that this is simply another example of the elected leaders of Milwaukee, and I go back to John Norquist and Tom Barrett, the previous mayors, catering to the downtown hotel service sector industry and essentially saying that that's the way to do economic development. If we invest in downtown, whether it's the Grand Avenue Mall, whether it's a convention, whatever, that it'll trickle down into the communities. And that has not happened. In fact, as all that investment has taken place downtown, the city has gotten poorer. The percentage of people in the city who are poor and extremely poor, which is actually a category that people who study this use, have gotten more poor. And so this raises the question of whether the new administration is going to continue to pursue a downtown development strategy that caters to the hotels and service industry, or whether they're going to try something different. Now, that's the economics of it. The politics of it are that the Republican Party has attacked, the Wisconsin Republican Party has attacked the city of Milwaukee both rhetorically and economically. They have slashed shared revenue. They have slashed shared revenue, which has Milwaukee now on the brink of economic collapse. The only thing that has prevented that has been the federal funds that have come in response to COVID. And those are going to dry up after next year. But the party, they have slashed shared revenue. They've slashed funding for Milwaukee Public Schools. They have refused to allow Milwaukee County to establish a sales tax so that it could fund its activities. And of course, on the political end, they have also questioned the validity of the votes of Milwaukee citizens and mischaracterized the city. So this is a party that has been hostile to the city of Milwaukee and its citizens. And now they want to come party here. And unfortunately, a lot of the city leaders have welcomed them with open arms.
So, Dr. Rosen, what do you say to the city leaders who say, and I heard this come out of the mayor's mouth, well, this is going to lead, we're going to be on the major stage. They're going to see us. And that's going to bring even more conventions to the city. What's your response to that?
I have two responses. First, if you study conventions and major conventions, they generally, people want to go to cities that are major tourist cities, San Francisco, Las Vegas, Atlanta.
Well, several years ago, Charlotte had both the Democrat and the Republican conventions.
Yeah, well, that's because it's another minor, second-tier city.
Right.
Most major conventions people want to go to a place like New Orleans,
right,
or Vegas.
There's all kind of action going
right,
on.
Right, New York City,
right,
Boston.
Are you saying Milwaukee's not there yet?
No, we're not there. In fact, we're not there yet, and
we never
have been. You know, we were a much larger city,
yeah,
as an industrial city, but we weren't a tourist attraction.
Right.
We were a manufacturing city. We've tried to remake ourselves in the same image as many of these cities that are major tourist and tourist areas, but that isn't that we can't compete with that.
That's correct.
And we shouldn't be.
That's not who we are.
Right. But it won't be successful. But I think we've already seen, you know, city after city has built a convention center. You know.
Oh yeah.
And they keep expanding the convention centers in the hopes that bringing tourists to the city will have a real strong economic bang. So our convention centers competing with Las Vegas or New Orleans.
Can't do it.
And
Atlanta.
You know, think about it. If you want to go on a vacation, or one of your relatives who doesn't live in Milwaukee, do they want to go to Milwaukee or do they want to go to Atlanta? Do
yeah.
they want to go to Vegas or New Orleans or San Francisco or L.A. or do they want to come to Milwaukee? It's obvious. And the idea that we're going to revitalize the city. And the second point,
Dr. Rosen, hold the thought. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. My guest is retired economics professor and former president of MATC faculty, Local 212, Dr. Michael Rosen. 844-967-2789 is the number. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is retired economics professor and former president of MATC faculty, Local 212, Dr. Michael Rosen. And he really is making a point that you're not hearing anywhere else. We're not hearing. There were some people who spoke in opposition early on at the Common Council,
yeah,
who said, well, we're not going to have the Republicans come here. But that was hushed up, and whoever spoke in opposition was kind of gotten back in line, and then the answer was full speed ahead. Dr. Rosen, you are laying out some points that have not been broached or talked about, why this is not the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Well, as I said, the economics of it don't work. And this $200 million is an inflated number that won't happen. And most importantly, the benefits of national conventions do not result in increased employment or increased wages for working people in the city. So the economics of it don't work. But there's also a political dimension to this that I think we need to talk about. And that is that the current Republican Party, and I do distinguish it from even the Republican Party of Ronald Reagan, where there were dog whistle racism. But the current Republican Party has openly courted white supremacist organizations, the Proud Boys, the Ku Klux Klan.
Oath Keepers.
You know, Donald Trump courted these people when they were in Charlottesville chanting, Jews
right.
will not replace us. He called them some very good people. A recent survey indicates that 66% of Republicans, not just the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys, but 66% of Republicans now ascribe to the racist replacement theory. That is that there are people in this country trying to replace
yes.
white people with immigrants and other people
right.
of color.
66%.
And even in Buffalo, where a white supremacist young man, went into a grocery store and killed 10 black African-American people. GOP leaders, they condemned the killing, but not the white supremacist ideology that the killer professed. In short, the Republican Party today doesn't even try to hide behind the dog whistle euphemisms that it used to use, and rather it's given full throated voice to the revolting and un-American neo-Nazi beliefs. These are neo-Nazi beliefs. By the way, it came out in the paper today that President Trump, when he was in office, said to General Milley that why don't the generals, why don't U.S. generals be like Hitler?
Yes.
Even though Hitler's generals actually, at least from the historical record, weren't as subservient as Trump wanted. But the fact is that Republican-controlled states like Wisconsin, which is today there's a major article in the New York Times about that documents kind of the craziness going on, but they have promoted the twin lies of voter fraud and stolen election, and they've targeted the city of Milwaukee.
You're right.
Get it back to the convention. They've tried to say that the votes in the city of Milwaukee were illegal votes and therefore should be thrown out, and the election of Joe Biden should be decertified. And we're welcoming that party into a city that is a majority minority city. They're going to bring the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys and the KKK and neo-Nazis with them. They're going to be marching in our streets. The experience in Charlotte, where they hosted a Republican convention, was that they ended up in debt. Milwaukee cannot afford to end up in debt because for security purposes, and yet there's going to be massive security downtown because there will be large demonstrations exactly because of the Republican treatment of the city of Milwaukee. And you're creating a very volatile situation in the city.
So, Dr. Rosen, what do you say to people who say you're being an alarmist? This is not true. This is you got to give this a chance. And you know, like the new mayor said, bipartisanship. There's nothing bipartisanship about saying yes, the Republicans can come here. I mean,
no, bipartisanship is working to pass a bill that
it will give the city an opportunity.
Well, an example of bipartisanship county would have been if the Republicans had voted for the Inflation Reduction Bill,
right,
or voted to help the veterans, which they ultimately did, but only after first voting down the bill and throwing a hissy fit about it. The fact is that the Republican Party nationally and in the state has not shown any desire to be bipartisan. Look, as soon as Governor Evers was elected and Josh Call was elected, the Republican Party in this state stripped them of their powers that they had been very happy
to give under
Scott Walker.
Right,
had.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So there's been no bipartisanship. So to think that us hosting the convention will cause the leopard to change its spots is naive at best. What I think, and this is just projection, and people can disagree with me, but what I think is the Republicans wanted to be in Milwaukee because it's a critical swing state. Some people call it the blue wall.
Right.
And they're going to come here and parade around as a party of diversity, even though they have stripped voting rights all over the country,
right,
even though they've gerrymandered in a way that disenfranchises black and brown citizens, and that's well documented. But they will throw some money around. They'll parade different candidates around, black and brown candidates, and all they will be attempting to do is flip 10,000, 11,000 votes, you know, given that Biden won by 21,000. All you've got to flip is 11,000 votes. And that's why they want to be here. In fact, they said that. They said that. Rice Priebus said when they got the convention, he said, yeah, Milwaukee, Wisconsin is a swing state. Now, we haven't heard that from Democratic elected officials. They keep saying, oh, we're going to make a lot of money on this, and this will get the Republicans to work with us. But the Republicans have admitted, we want to be here because it's a swing state, and we want to win Wisconsin in 2020.
You know, Dr. Rosen, I have seen via radio that's here now on different radio stations, and the fact that they put Republicans put a political office right in the heart of Black Milwaukee on Dr. King Drive. They have made some inroads with some Black leadership in this community, and as you stated, all it takes is a handful,
right.
and they are starting to swing that. And I've said this to many Democrats: are you aware of what's taking place, and what is your pushback on that? Because if you said 11,000 votes, mm-hmm. that's a drop in the bucket.
That's right.
And if you see exactly what the conservative movement is doing, and buying some Black leadership and doing these types of things, there's too much at stake, right? I mean, there really is too much at stake.
Here's how to think about what's at stake. Recently, Senator Ron Johnson said that he wanted to make Social Security and Medicare discretionary.
Yeah, we talked about that yesterday. Yeah.
Now, what that means, the discretionary budget is only about 33% of the total federal budget. The non-discretionary items, those are items that principally Medicare and Social Security, those are items that if you qualify, you are entitled to those benefits. And it's not up to the Congress. The Congress can't just decide one year, we're not going to give
you put the money in that.
You worked for it.
Yes.
You invested in it. And it is by right yours. Plus, it's the humane thing.
Right.
The whole purpose of Social Security and Medicare was to ensure that people who have devoted their lives to working in this country and building this country and serving this country have a dignified old age,
right.
A golden age period. The only reason to move those to discretionary, that is where they are evaluated every year, is to cut them.
Right.
That's the only reason. We talked about Ronald Reagan earlier. Part of discretionary spending is defense spending. Under Reagan, defense spending
skyrocketed,
but he slashed the other areas of discretionary spending, including veterans benefits, including education, including some discretionary health care programs. He cut them by 13%. The only reason that Ron Johnson or anybody would want to put these programs on, make them discretionary, is so they could be cut and be assured that if the Republicans controlled the federal government, that is the executive branch and the legislative branch, that they would cut Social Security and Medicare, because that has been their goal since Social Security was established.
Dr. Rosen, we got to leave it there. We'll see you back in 2 weeks. Dr. Michael Rosen, really appreciate it.
We'll see
you. Got to go to a break.
Bye-bye.
Be right back.